From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
Howdy, Phoenix. It's Billy. And right now, the city's feeling good. The weather's warming up, people are getting out, and the energy's in the air again, and we're totally here for it. But this weekend for us, it's a lot about cleaning house, catching up, reaching out, getting organized behind the scenes so that everything that we're building at Gay PHX is stronger, cleaner, and ready for what's next. Because if we're going to do this right, if we're going to build something that actually lasts for this community, we've got to put in the work. And part of that work is learning how to build things the right way, connecting with people who've done it, getting guidance, understanding what it really takes to make something sustainable. So we've got to give a shout out to the Greater Equality Chamber of Commerce for Phoenix for the education, the guidance, the real world support. They've been helping us turn Gay PHX into something that's not just exciting, but built to last. And we're really glad that we joined. And to the people already showing up and believing in what we're building, Lookout News, The Tax Person, Team Friendly, Dr. James Wang, Lewis Labdy Law, thank you for your voices, for your knowledge, for your support. That's what makes this real. And speaking of building, not just platforms, but people, passion and purpose, that's exactly where today's conversation goes. Because building something doesn't always look like code and systems. Sometimes it's years of learning a craft, figuring it out the hard way, and then walking away when things change. But then coming back with more perspective, more intention, and a deeper connection to why you started. That's what this episode's about. We're sitting down with DJ Jack Daddy Dave to talk about that journey, that return, and what it means to move a room with purpose. But first, you already know what time it is. Let's throw it over to Brian for his hot three. So wherever you're listening, turn it up. This is Gay PHX.
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, 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 Phoenix, I hope you stretched, because this weekend, it's heels on hardwood, drinks in hand, voices raised at the screen, and at least one moment where you'll yell, she should not have gone home, like your life depends on it. The city is buzzing, the queens are booked, and somewhere right now, someone is picking out their outfit and wondering who they might run into. If you're thinking about laying low, not this week. This is Brian's Hot 3, your Desert Den Daddy approved excuse to get out. Get loud and get just a little bit reckless in the best way possible. Let's get into it. Hot pick number one, RuPaul's Drag Race viewing party at Cobalt Bar, Friday, April 24th at 9 p.m. This is not just watching TV, this is full contact sport. Cobalt's Drag Race viewing party is the longest running in Phoenix for a reason, because nobody watches quietly. You're walking into a room full of super fans, side eyes, dramatic gasps, and that one person who definitely thinks they could do better. The reactions are loud, the commentary is ruthless, and the energy unmatched. It's part viewing party, part community ritual, and part did we just become best friends yelling at the same queen? Show up early, grab your drink, and get ready to feel things. Hot pick number two, Bottled Bombshells Drag Brunch at the Wine Girl in Scottsdale, Sunday, April 26th. Seating is starting at 10 a.m. and showtime is at 11 a.m. Oh, this isn't brunch. This is a day-long commitment to fabulousness. Hosted by the enchanting Paris Armour McKenzie, this lineup is stacked with glam, talent, and just enough chaos to keep things interesting. You've got performances that hit, a DJ keeping the vibe alive, and a room full of people who absolutely understood the assignment. Add in delicious food, drinks, and a crowd that come to celebrate, and suddenly your Sunday turns into a full-on event. Not a quick bite, a whole experience. Bring your crew, bring your energy, and maybe pace yourself, or don't.
Hot pick number three, Sunday Funday at the Thunderbird Lounge. All right, this is your early warning system, because your Sundays are going to get a whole lot less rest day and a whole lot more, why am I still here at sunset? Sunday Funday is bringing that chaotic trivia energy you love from Geeks Who Drink and flipping it into a full-on Sunday takeover. We're talking free arcade games, yard games, trivia that gets just competitive enough. Add in drink specials, concert ticket giveaways, and a crowd that's here to play, and suddenly your Sundays are booked. Consider yourself warned and maybe start pacing now. And here's a heads up. Arizona Puppy and Trainer Contest is coming for May 2nd at the Cobalt Bar. Now it's time to show up and support. All right, let's shift gears and talk about the community, confidence, and a whole lot of wagon energy. The Arizona Puppy and Trainer Contest is where personality, connection, and identity come together in one space. This isn't just about competition, it's about visibility, pride, and celebrating a community that continues to grow stronger every day. Every contestant stepping onto the stage is bringing their story, their energy, and their place in the world. And that deserves to be seen. So mark it down, show up, and be part of something that matters. Stay hydrated, stay dangerous, and if you're going to make a bad decision, at least make it a memorable one. Phoenix, this is one of your weekends where the energy doesn't ask for permission. It pulls you in. It dares you to show up. It reminds you that the best nights don't happen by accident. You choose them. So choose the right outfit, choose the moment, and choose to be exactly where the magic is happening. Be seen. Be bold. Be the reason someone looks across the room and forgets what they were saying. From the shadows of the radio towers, I'm your Desert Den Daddy Brian, reminding you that life's too short for maybe next time. Show up, stay out, and give them something to remember. Until next time, that's what's hot.
Want all the details? Head over to GabePHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the Valley.
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person with your tax year countdown. If your income qualifies, contributing to retirement can unlock the saver's credit. Free money for planning ahead. Don't leave it on the table if you're eligible. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com or look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories. More voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX Podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, some passions start with a single spark and burn for decades. What happens when the thing you loved at 8 years old still drives you 30 years later? When the craft you taught yourself in your bedroom becomes the art that moves a dance floor? Today's guest walked away from it all when the world changed, then found their way back at a moment that reignited everything. Please welcome to the Rainbow Tinted Microphone, DJ Jack Daddy Dave. Welcome.
I choked up with that one. Gosh, that was awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for what you do. Again, we love featuring local talent, so it's awesome that you get time to come on and talk to us. So I really appreciate it.
And I'm just happy to be here. Thank you.
Of course. So what started the beginning? What was the spark? What was that first moment that you knew music was going to be your language?
So for me, I think it was just growing up. My parents had lots of 45s, and I was always listening to music. They both worked a lot and weren't around much. So for me, like, music really became a way to express myself and to put into it just to help me understand the feeling I was feeling. Because you kids, like, you hear a song and then you think about things. So that was my outlet. And the more I did it, the more I learned to, like, channel that and see what responds to different kinds of people, and then try to play for them and try to shape the sound on the dance floor and shape the up and shape the other mood.
And do you remember the first record that you played to death?
First record I played to death. It probably would have been French Kiss by Little Lewis. It was like an early house track. And there's a part of the song where it slows down and this girl has this orgasm. I think I heard it on the dance floor one night when I was, like, underage at some Connecticut club. And I was like, wow, this is just amazing, because lights were on, the beat was hitting hard, and people were losing their fucking mind. And I was like, I want to do that.
So what was your first mixer then? How did you first get into it? Because there was no YouTube, no right. tutorials, nobody to teach you. You know, how did you learn?
This was back in 1988 or 89, and I just remember watching Yo MTV, like, raps and seeing the DJs there. I just got into hip hop because I went to a like, private school in Connecticut. So hip hop was new to me. I was really into, like, rock and things like that. So I was watching this, saw the DJ, went to the club, and the second went to a Radio Shack, actually. And they had a mixer, like,
Radio
there.
Radio Shack.
And I was like, okay. And then my parents had one, they had one, like, one on the turntable, and I had that. and mix two together and then have tape deck or something. And I was trying to beat match with those two things, and it was a train wreck because back then there wasn't the technology that we have today, and you really had to listen to it and try to make it work somehow, really making it out of my hack. As I started doing it more and more, I saved up and I bought one Technique out of 1200 and used like that to DJ, and I used my father's, I don't know, hi-fi like turntable. So much so that one day he was like, stop using my shit, and he bought me the actual Technique 1200, so that I had two.
Ah.
And that was entry point for me, was that now I had the turntables, a shitty mixer, but I was able to beat match by ear and count my records to see how many beats per minute were in each record and put them into collection, organized that way. But there was no point of reference, really. I spent a lot of time learning. I would say probably the first 10 years just trying to figure it all out, just because, again, I wasn't DJing at clubs or anything. I was DJing at the house,
right,
or church function, school functions, and things like that. And I sucked. But I had the gear.
Hey, two turntables and a microphone. That's what it takes.
And a speaker.
I grew up during that same time. So, like, explain a few things to people in case they're millennials. Yep. Radio Shack was a store that sold electronic equipment and parts. Like, you could literally build a computer with all the parts that were at Radio Shack back in the day, yo.
Sold computers. They had their what was that, like the Tandy or something?
They had their own Tandy computer. There was the Radio Shack version of almost everything, including equipment. And Technics was the most cost effective. I think I still have a Technic mixer in the garage, I bet.
Their stuff was incredible. It was just solid, and you could beat the hell out of it, and it was still like still other work.
Right.
And their decks would not only skip. You could bump into it and it would still play fine. Which back then was a big thing because people always bump into the other DJ. the record to skip.
And for me, I also was learning DJ, but different. I was learning radio DJ. So I had a little dual tape deck system with it was little mixers. So I had a little literal DJ station so I could go between the two tape decks. And I did my little radio show to no one.
But that was like me still to this day. I'm here at the house like DJing for like me.
Right.
And my little tiny dog happened to the party.
You fake it till you make it. And that's how you learn.
Exactly.
And then you get an opportunity. I got an opportunity and I got into college radio. And then that's the path. And then you get a gig and then you get paid eventually.
Yeah. Oh my God. College radio. I did that too. WRGW back in like Washington, D.C.
First radio.
Yeah, it was fun.
KBLZ. It was the college station. Yeah. So we were just transitioning to digital and we had this CD that looked like a record. So it looked like a 45. That was the imprint on it. So that's the one that I kept and it has the stations that are on it. I've cherished that. I carry that to this day.
It's so crazy how like different things are now and how back then you really couldn't make a mistake. And if you did, people were going to know. You know what I mean? It wasn't room for error.
Right. There was no voice tracking. There was no... In fact, that is how I got my first gig in radio. Paid gig was an overnight radio. It was a news anchor. The longer the title, the less you got paid. So I was an overnight weekend news anchor. Probably one of the longest titles that you could
have. But that's so cool, though, because I feel like it's almost like a lot of art. Because like in radio, you have to know how to talk on the mic and how to pronounce things and how to keep like a story going and make it interesting without having any of that background stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. And now it's all so polished and it's such a high dollar market that you're not allowed to make mistakes. So there's rarely things are, I hate to pull the curtain and be the guy that ruins the magic, but it's rarely live.
And it's like completely fake.
Yeah. And like, so it's really interesting. I just learned that there's a local station here, I believe KZON. It's weird because I worked for KZON, but then they changed the call letters and then someone else grabbed the call letters. So the KZON is not the one that I worked at. and they hired a bunch. They just wanted to ride the coattails of the zone. And so they hired a bunch of jocks and they had the jocks train the AI on their voice. And now the jocks are leaving. So I think the voices are staying. It's weird.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right.
And we all saw this. We all know how this movie ends. AI is going to kill us all. Like we all saw Terminator.
It's funny because me and my Alan, we do the math a little better because we're technologists. So we're riding this bleeding edge of AI, and we play around with it, of course. And we see its limitations. So we're like, okay, we know this week we don't have to worry about it taking over the world.
So we're kind of self-aware, right? It's going to happen.
But we're like, okay, as. And it's interesting. I read all these stories. I know we're completely diverging off the interview.
Okay.
But it's just amazing because there are just so many limitations, and we're really pushing the bounds of it when we work with it. And so at this stage, you don't have a fear of it taking over the world, but you do have a fear of it taking a lot of people's jobs in a lot of different sectors in a lot of different ways that we just can't even imagine right now.
Running over in the car, like the other baby was driving around.
And that's why it's important to us to focus on local and the community and the people around us, because we need to gather around each other, because there are a lot of people with my technical skill sets that are now out on the market, and what's going to happen. Yeah. And so if they're a part of our community, please help us. Please join us. Please help us build something that is for us, that we can sustain as a community versus building it for somebody else. True. I'm tired of making money for other people. That's really what I said when I got let go for corporate and focused on building this for the community, was that I have the skills and talent to help make something for this community. So let's do that instead. Let's make it for the community instead of for investors. So here we are.
Outstanding. You are awesome. You are awesome for that one. Yes.
Thank you. All right. Okay. So let's go. Late 90s, the industry shifts to digital.
Yeah. So like in the 90s, like I was doing things like house parties, like my high school, like DJ there. My father threw this tennis tournament back in like Connecticut, and he always would have hired me to DJ like a dance party for it. I was doing that kind of a thing. Went to college in D.C., got into a few clubs there, had a buddy that I started to go out like a DJ with, and we would just do back up my truck with all the records and all the gear and drive there and set it all up and carry the records back. It was a whole lot. But then around 1997, 98-ish, things began to go digital. And I just had a really hard time accepting the whole controller, the laptop, having a waveform there. It was just too much information for me. And I walked away. I remember I sold my decks. I kept the vinyl just in case I ever wanted to go back into it. But I sold my turntable, then was like, I'm just going to focus on making music, and got into beat machines and sequencers and things like that. And again, self-taught, just because there really wasn't anyone that I knew that was really into that stuff. And back then it was just so expensive to get into that.
And still no YouTube, way to learn. I know I keep going back to YouTube, but I've learned so much from YouTube. I built a whole room.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And then now it's like everybody is doing it. So you have that kind of, you have the forum, then you can just ask somebody or they can show you how to do it. Where back then it was like, I use the controller differently because I just figured it out that way. Or like I interact with like my folks just because it seemed like it made sense that my friends would actually do that stuff. So like, why do you do it that way? I'm like, I don't know. It just seemed like a nice way to do it. Like, it's actually not. That's what I'm doing. But carry on. So that's what I did there. And didn't ever expect to get back into DJing, to be honest with you. I always loved music and I would always make mixtapes for like friends, but that was just like CDs and things like that, or like the mini disc or things like that.
Technology just kept going and evolving, and formats different changed. And then ultimately we get to the point where it's not even CDs. It's just, like you said, digital waveforms that people carry around. Yeah. And so now it's a laptop and a control interface that has two virtual turntables.
I was like, what on earth is this? And it was like, it didn't make sense to me just because it was like too much information. Because I wasn't used to that. I was used to like listening for the beat changes and things like that.
Right.
And to have the computer be able to do it, I was like, no, man, so I'm not going to trust that one, because I had Windows, whatever their shitty one was, like Windows ME or whatever their worst operating system was. And I was like, I'm not trusting this one live.
So what ends up bringing you back then?
DJ Danny G. He was the one, I would say, that got me back into it, just because I came down here one time and I was visiting, and he was DJing at the bunkhouse, and he had his controller. He was like, get up here and try this mix. And I was terrified. I totally fucked up the mix. So I was like, hell no. But like, I watched him use the controller And he used it just uses two turntables. He didn't really do anything else in terms of focus on like the mixing. And I was like, wow, you can actually use that thing like it's a turntable. He was like, duh, yeah, you can. He was like, don't worry about anything else. Just focus on the mixing. And I did that for a little bit. And then I was talking to Emerson, and he was like, you should play with Moody. And I just got back into this. I don't think I'm really ready for it. He's like, no, you're fine. Maybe 2 or 3 months later, I was playing with Matt at a Fur Trade. And that was a whole experience because that was my first time returning to club scene in 20 years.
Wow.
And then after that, I just kept going and going. And then Danny had to DJ more and more with him, with DJ with Matt. And it just took off. And it was, wow, this is what I really love doing. And I'm actually getting back into it now in a different, in like a different way.
That's awesome. And we love Emerson. He's always so encouraging. He's been a big proponent and supporter of us since day one. We love Matt Moody. Right. We love that he's building the Barracks. We're super excited about that. And Danny G with everything that he's built with Bear Encounters and Tidal Wave. Mm-hmm. We just love all the stuff that they've been doing. And it's great that they help bring you back into the fold, so to speak.
Totally. And it's also cool that when I look at DJs like Emerson and like the Green Theater and Jesse, it's like they picked this up so fast. I'm still happy for them. And it's also so cool that like now they have like access to people that I just didn't have back in like the day. So it's like watching them grow, it's happening exponentially fast because it's like they have access to Danny who's like, hey, why not do it this way or do it like this? Or it's just really like cool to see. And it's such a really tight community. They'll get to play together and help each other out and push each other, which is awesome.
So how do you define your sound now?
My thing now is I think my biggest strength is that I know my collection and I've been listening to music for so long, I can adapt and play a little bit of everything. And I try to mix everything in if possible. So my sound is always, it's always changing. I would say it's rooted in dancehall, classic rock, hip hop. And I try to blend those together to create an experience. But the one thing I always do is that like I try to play for the audience. So I try to see what people are responding to and then keep playing something along that one and then add something in just to mix it up. I never want to get labeled as he's this kind of a DJ. I want to be like all that DJ, if that makes sense.
It does. So how do you know when to take a risk or when to play it safe?
That's a really good question. I would say you take a risk if people are not responding to what is safe. If you're playing all of one genre because you made your playlist and you thought this is what was going to work and it's not working, take a risk. You know what I mean? Put me out there just to see how the crowd responds to that. And if they do, great. Keep going down that vein. If they don't do that again. But mix it up. Because I've always tried to find that one person in the crowd who isn't doing anything. And if I can get that one person to dance, then I succeeded because they're having a good time. Because people, not everyone comes there to dance. So it's kind of, you got to weigh it out.
Got it. Yeah, some people come to chill or just socialize or watch the dancers. Some are wallflowers.
And that's fine. Not everyone is going to be on the floor. Every now and then, it does happen that way. And that's like the best feeling ever when you can really say that like the crowd and you are kind of like in sync. And you can play anything and they're just into it. And that's an awesome feeling you have. Like New Year's was like that here. And that was awesome. Like Danny and I were just in the zone together, which was awesome.
So with 3 decades of music knowledge in your head, how do you decide what makes the cut and what doesn't?
So like, I would say for me, I have a certain sound I like to hear and it's like heavy percussion, thick bass, and a really catchy, yummy hook. So I try to find songs that all in there, but I also think back to what I liked to hear when I was 20, 30, 40 and play those songs too, because I feel that you can get people to go down that memory lane with you, they're going to have a good time, right? Because not everybody is that into tech house as I am. Some people want to hear the classics. And I forget how powerful the classics are and what they can really do. And also, I know my samples too.
What's changed about DJing that genuinely excites you about like the technology that's available?
I think that having everything in one area is really nice. So not having to carry the crate of records around, having digital file that you can store on the drive and that you can pick that drive with you is huge because I don't do on the playlist typically. Like when I like DJ, everything is on the fly for me. So I want to have access to my entire collection, which is over 7,000 tracks. And what's weird about that is I don't have all those songs like in my head, but if you were to ask me if I were to have something, I could tell you yes or no. Even though I don't have them all in my head, I know my collection. pretty well. I think for me, being able to have that at your fingertips, if she was also, most controllers now can connect to Wi-Fi. So I can, in theory, if somebody requests a song I don't have, I can download it and then play that song, or I can like stream to it. You know what I mean? So it's right. Like we have access to so much more of the music now, which is a really cool thing to have, because you can really dial it into whatever people want to hear for the most part.
And that's one of the things that is both scary and awesome about having this technology and how it's evolved. Now, you said you still have your 45s, so there's the debate. Vinyl versus digital.
Like, they're all in the garage now. In the garage, and I look at them like, hey, 45, I can see you, but I have no way to play them. You know what I mean? And it's kind of like what to do with them. I don't want to throw them out because they're like music, and I could never part with it like that.
Right.
But I don't know what to do with them. Take it to space.
So how has your taste evolved? What are you playing now versus what you were doing back in 95, let's say?
Yeah, so like I would say right now I'm probably playing more tech house or houseier tracks just because I like that old school hip-hop. Like I like, because so for me, I was a DJ from like 1989 to 1999. That whole era of the birth of hip-hop house, you know, I'm like dance hall, that's what I love to play. And I also love that really ghetto Baltimore house, like... dirty shake your ass shit too. So if I can get away with it, I'll play some like Luke or something like that. And that's when Danny's, oh my God, here we go again with this like ghetto shit. And I'm like, yeah, whatever.
So,
you know,
how does the Phoenix scene make it different from like Connecticut or DC or any place else that you've played?
Yeah. So like Phoenix is interesting because I was in SF for about 20 years before I came here. And it's such a different thing there compared to here. Phoenix is, it's such a newer scene. It's such a big scene too, in that everybody's everywhere. There's no real concentration of one sound in a particular area. I almost think the Phoenix doesn't really have a sound yet, and it'll be interesting to see how that kind of like develops. But like, I find it fascinating that there's really not a gay dance club here, right? You have only bars. You have some bar clubs, but there really isn't the Walter Warehouse or 10-15 Fulcrum or like Twilight or like anything of that like scale here, which I don't know why there isn't one. But I think that would help galvanize people around the sound, just because it's like you've got like the Bunkhouse and that's been like the fur trade sound that we're there, or it's like the Matt or Swift, like, or it's like their encounter sound, or it's like changes, but there isn't really one central spot to go and hear things. I don't think. I can't think of any place.
Right. No, it's all like genres of parties, Mega Wolf, Chrome. Yeah. There's all these different pockets of things.
And different people come to different things. Every time I go down the code, I'm like, where do these guys come from? I've never seen them before, which is cool, but I'm like, where? How is it possible that I've been here this long and I've never seen these people?
So,
but then again, I'm in Mesa, which is edge of like the known universe.
The far reaches of Phoenix.
Exactly. Everyone's like, where? No, never mind.
So to someone who's listening right now, who's passionate about music and they want to become a DJ, but they're scared to start. Yeah. Maybe they're 20, maybe they're 50. What do you tell them?
I would say just to start. Listen, I would say first start collecting music. Just get what you like. Listen to your collection and get familiar with it. And then talk to DJs. Anytime you see me out, talk to me. I'll be happy to show you what I know, or we can even hang out and you can make the music or whatever. I think it's like, this is a great time to real. This is what you want to do. It's a very expensive hobby. I will say that much. You might go broke doing it, but if you like it, there is no better feeling. It's also a little bit terrifying. You know what I mean? Because it's like you are the one on stage and people are looking at you, and if you like mess up, they probably wouldn't hear it, but like you would. And I make mistakes all the time. I'm always in the process of trying to learn and trying to be better and trying to make a mix that I probably shouldn't, but I like the way it sounded at first, so why not? But definitely ask and just watch on the YouTube
and
Google it. But talk to people. I think like Danny has been really good about getting people who want a DJ to come up and learn with him. But it has become like a growing pot for like us to practice our skill and cut our teeth, so to speak.
Right.
Which I didn't have. It was kind of like, for me, it felt like, all right, here we go, let's do it. And then he loved it, and it was like a train wreck, or
right.
You have to leave the work, but or I blew the fuse again. But now it's like, we do have the safe state, we can play four people, and if something would ever happen, there is someone there who can step in and be like, I got this, don't worry about it.
Yes, and it's great to have Danny around. He's actually encouraged me to come up there. I don't have the time or where for all, unfortunately, with everything going on. But I do want to learn. And on that note, as far as cost, I will say that you actually can get into it at a low cost. Now, you're not going to get all the fancy deck stuff. I have cheap little deck that I think was like maybe $100. You could probably get one secondhand for $50. And then you can get free software. So you can get started pretty cheaply. However, you're going to have to buy tracks. And that's where. Or subscribe to music services.
Or download questionable files.
Right.
Janky. Yeah. But you're right. And there is that. But if that's what you love to do, it's like you probably would have some music anyway. And then you go with that. That for some reason, the story just popped in my head. But one time, Danny asked me, he asked me to gigi with him at like Bear Jamboree in Florida, I want to say. And this was maybe like 3 years ago. So I had just got back into it. So I go down there and I'm excited, like nervous. They have a full on stage with speakers and lights and all this stuff, right? And they had a system that I was not familiar with. I was used to my controller and I thought they would just have something like that there, but they didn't have that. So, like, their system, the decks didn't really talk to each other. And I was freaking out. And they both like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? Freaking out. And Jimmy saw this, right? And he's like, listen, take a moment, go somewhere, get your skin together, and do what you do. Get off with this, do what you do. And I was like, oh shit. All right, here we go. And we totally killed it. But it was kind of like that was what was needed at the time. It's kind of like that's what we all do to everyone here. We're there to help, but this is what you do. And this is what you love to do. Then fucking do it.
Remind you. This is who you are.
Exactly.
So now,
I was like, really?
If you could go back to that kid with a box of 45s, what would you tell him?
I would say, this is what you love to do. This brings you joy. Forget all the other stuff you did in college and focus on this. Like, definitely go to school and get your degree. But if you love this, do this for a living, right? Because I went a different direction. I worked in tech and I was good at what I did. I never loved it. I made a lot of money doing it, but I never loved it. This I love to do. Like 9 times out of 10, I'm DJing for Robin Free just because I love to DJ. Right? I'll DJ anywhere. But I would definitely tell myself, don't be afraid of whatever it is that you have, like dreams. Don't be afraid of that. If you love it, do it. You just do it well.
Awesome. And where can people catch your sets?
So right now you can go to I Love Me Some Jack Daddy on MySpace. No, I'm sorry, not MySpace. MySpace got it old.
I was like, MySpace? Wow.
Yeah, I have MySpace. No, Mixcloud. On Mixcloud, just search for Jack Daddy Dave, and I'll definitely top up.
Awesome. And how can people follow your work, like on social media?
So on Instagram and Facebook, Jack Daddy Dave, and two accounts. You can find me there, or just look up Dave Holly. That's my real name, for those who don't know.
Excellent.
Yeah, find me there.
Awesome. Jack Daddy Dave, we really appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you taking the time. It's so awesome. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, definitely come on and check us out on the 27th of this month at the Humble Royale for Encounters. So it's going to be a really good time.
Awesome. We'll be there.
And thank you. And thank you again for this. I had a really good time. It's awesome talking about this. And I look forward to seeing you out and party.
Pride lives here.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma, and I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about HIV services. Live and love stigma-free of HIV. Today's world, HIV is very treatable and preventable. So in my opinion, fighting stigma of people living with HIV and testing for HIV is the first step. Whether testing for the first time or living with HIV, care and support are available throughout Phoenix. Share this message with your friends and family, and let them know you'll be there for them no matter what. HIV testing is quick, free, and confidential, and results can come in just minutes. And if someone tests reactive for HIV, treatment helps people live a long, happy, healthy life, and keeps the virus undetectable, meaning the virus can't be passed on to others sexually. We are all in this together. All over Phoenix, trusted providers are offering care, connection, and compassion without judgment. Check out the website hivaz.org for more information and to link to a provider. Let's live and love stigma-free of HIV.
Another reason we love this community.
And just like that, that's this week's podcast, Phoenix. Huge thank you to DJ Jack Daddy Dave for coming on, sharing his story, his journey, and that reminder that what you love, it doesn't leave you. It just waits for you to come back to it. And to you, thank you for being here with us. Thank you for making it to this part of the podcast, for listening, for showing up, and for being a part of what we're building. Because this only works if we're doing this together. Now, let me tell you about something important. The Founding 50. You're going to hear businesses mentioned on GayPHX. Names, services, people in our community doing work day in and day out. And yeah, on paper, those are ads. But that's not really what this is. We're not here to sell you something. This is more about awareness. It's about making sure you know who's out there, who's showing up for this community, who's building something real right here in Phoenix. Because when you need something, when you're looking for someone you can trust, when you want to spend your money in a way that supports your community, we want you to know who those people are. That's what the Founding 50 is. Not just support for GayPHX, but visibility for the businesses that deserve to be seen. And on that note, if you've got a business, a service, a product that you want the community to know about, we've got a free business directory listing at GayPHX.com. No gatekeeping, no pressure, just a place to be seen. So reach out, get listed, let's work together to help spread the word about what you do. Because that's how we get through times like this, by rallying together, by lifting each other up, and by making sure our community supports our community. Because this isn't just a station, it's a platform for all of us. And I'd be remiss if I didn't remind you, we're streaming 24/7 with interviews, music, and voices from our community. Simply ask your smart speaker to play GayPHX from TuneIn, and we can chill in the background. We'll see you next week. If you see us out and about, come grab a selfie with us. We love you, Phoenix.
We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side. We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side.
Thanks for hanging out with the Gay PHX podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.